Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to our study today and our video. And the time and the date, first of all, is August 31st, 2023. The time is 1550 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. Welcome once again. And this is a song from 1981, which hit number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100 in the U.S. in 1981. It's by Daryl Hall and John Oates. Daryl is the lead vocalist and the keyboardist or keyboard player. The song is called You Make My Dreams. Yeah, I forgot. I was listening to it on headphones. Okay. We've got to reset. There we go. Just like that. I don't need the earphones. It's from 1981. It's called You Make My Dreams by Daryl Hall and John Oates. What a song. That's a song I never really thought much about over the year. I didn't ever really listen much to Hall & Oates. I didn't know about many of their songs, I suspect. But I know I've heard that song before. I just didn't know it was Hall & Oates. But what a beautiful, what an energetic song. What a powerful song that makes me, anyway, want to get up and dance in a very joyous way. Our chapter 6 now is where we're beginning to, for the continuation of our study of Born and Raised, our article about Jesus and his life and the chronology of his life. The title of chapter 6 is Roman Enrollments, Augustus, Luke, which spells as an acronym, REAL. The quote from Psalm 19 and 6, or the Russian Bible 18 and 7, and the 19 and 6 is from the New World Translation. From one extremity of the heavens is its going forth. Should I put that? I don't have any water. Where's my water? Where did I put it? And its finished circuit is to their other extremities, and there is nothing concealed from its heat. That's the end of that Psalm 19 and 6. I guess I didn't bring the water. Okay. It's good. It's good enough. Okay, good. Well, many, many aspects of my recording of the videos are improving. Many aspects are improving, but it's still a complex procedure. Oh, wow. I just need water. If I could only clear my throat now, I'd be able to read in a normal voice. I wonder if that's also caused by the vitamin D toxicity. I'm still quite weak and quite, what's the word again? Fatigued. But I'm not, you know, I'm not as clumsy in my walking. I don't stumble as much. So I know I'm getting better, and I have to abstain from vitamin D and also from calcium. But I've just learned that vitamin C is the antidote to all poison, I'm going to be taking a lot more vitamin C, and hopefully that will rapidly speed up my recovery. But nobody really knows. Very few people know about vitamin C as an antidote, but it truly, truly is against even snake bite and any kind of poison. It would be very easy to compromise our faith, as those have done in their interpretation of Luke's gospel, by admitting the possibility of his reference to Governor Quirinius of Syria as a reference to the later census. For the entire scholarly world recognizes that in the year 6 CE, Quirinius is governor of Syria and presides over a census sanctioned by the Roman Caesar Augustus. The lack of surviving evidence of an earlier census in BCE 6, 11 years earlier, since there's no year zero, does not prove, since lack of proof is not a proof of lack, it did not occur. But there are many events for which no evidence is yet extant, but which we believe did take place, for there are records we know missing, and not all is recorded. It is true that not every civic record is preserved, as it is also true that many literary works are misplaced or have perished, despite being known from references. In the case where a literary work has not survived but is referred to in other ancient literature, do we ever maintain that the writer referring to it was mistaken? Clearly, this is the most absurd notion imaginable, as it denies the principle of communication as paramount. In the case of the divine word of God, however, it has been considered of such great providence, and the ones commenting on it have seen such a great opportunity to further their own views, that the temptation to make a remark to reinforce every doubt has been irresistible. So that's the end of paragraph 1 of chapter 6 of Born and Raised. And we have a picture here of a statue of Augustus, who's called Augustus of something. We'll see it again. But here's that statue of Augustus. Look how ornate it is. The Romans made significant records, not all of which were preserved, of course, but some of which were artistic and in the form of sculpture. So there's one that survived. Evidently, look at this. It's called Augustus of Prima Porta, Vatican Museums, from the first century. from the first century. I guess my voice is still going to be squeaky here. Our scripture from the Proverbs for today, little children, is Ecclesiastes 8 and 2. I say, quote, keep the order, the very order of the king, and that out of regard for the oath of God. Keep the very order of the king, and that out of regard for the oath of God. So those are words that tell us that we should be in subjection to someone who is in power and the authority given to him as a king, for example. Is this reference, or that's what's referred to here. From Deuteronomy 22 now, Moses continues in talking to the Israelites, all of them being situated on the east bank of the Jordan, north of the Salt Sea, and opposite Jericho, which is on the west side of the Jordan. Moses says to the Israelites, are we ready? Let me get a little bit of water here at the beginning. Little ones, Moses said, you must not see the bull of your brother or his sheep straying about and deliberately withdraw from them. You should by all means lead them back to your brother. And if your brother is not near you, and you have not got to know him, you must also bring it home into the midst of your house, and it must continue with you until your brother has searched for it. And you must return it to him. That is the way, too, that you will do with his ass, and that is the way you will do with his mantle, and that is the way you will do with anything lost of your brother's, which gets lost from him and which you have found. You will not be allowed to withdraw yourself. You must not see the ass, or the donkey, that is, of your brother, or his bull fall down on the road and deliberately withdraw from them. You should, by all means, help him raise them up. No garb of an able-bodied man should be put upon a woman. Neither should an able-bodied man wear the mantle of a woman. For anybody doing these things is something detestable to Jehovah your God. In case a bird's nest happens to be before you in the way, in any tree or on the earth with young ones or eggs, and the mother is sitting upon the young ones or the eggs, you must not take the mother along with the offspring. You should by all means send the mother away, but you may take the offspring for yourself, in order that it may go well with you, and you may indeed lengthen your days. In case you build a new house, you must also make a parapet for your roof, that you may not place blood guilt upon your house because someone falling might fall from it. You must not sow your vineyard with two sorts of seed, for fear that the full produce of the seed that you might sow and the product of the vineyard may be forfeited to the sanctuary. You must not plow with a bull and an ass together. You must not wear mixed stuff of wool and linen together. You should make tassels for yourself on the four extremities of your clothing with which you cover yourself. In case a man takes a wife and actually has relations with her and has come to hate her, and he has charged her with notorious deeds and brought forth a bad name upon her, and has said, this is the woman I have taken, and I proceeded to go near her, and I did not find evidence of virginity in her, the father of the girl and her mother must also take and bring forth the evidence of the girl's virginity to the older men of the city at the gate of it, and the girl's father must say to the older men, I gave my daughter to this man as a wife, and he went hating her, and here he is charging her with notorious deeds, saying, I have found your daughter does not have evidence of virginity. Now this is the evidence of my daughter's virginity, and they must spread out the mantle before the older men of the city. And the older men of the city, of that city, must take the man and discipline him. And they must fine him 100 silver shekels and give them to the girl's father, because he brought forth a bad name upon a virgin of Israel, and she will continue to be his wife. He will not be allowed to divorce her all his days. If, though, this thing is proved to be the truth, evidence of virginity was not found in the girl, they must also bring the girl out to the entrance of her father's house. And the men of her city must pelt her with stones, and she must die because she committed a disgraceful folly in Israel by committing prostitution in the house of her father. So you must clear away what is bad from your midst. Interesting, they call it prostitution simply because it was sex outside of marriage. Isn't that interesting? Verse 22, in case a man is found lying down with a woman owned by an owner, both of them must then die together. The man lying down with the woman and the woman. So you must clear away what is bad out of Israel. That's clearly adultery, if the woman was owned by an owner. In case there happened to be a virgin girl engaged to a man, and the man actually found her in the city and laid down with her, you must also bring them both out to the gate of that city and pelt them with stones, and they must die. The girl, for the reason that she did not scream in the city. And the man, for the reason that he humiliated the wife of his fellow man. So you must clear away what is evil from your midst. If, however, it is in the field that the man found the girl who was engaged, and the man grabbed hold of her and lay down with her, and the man who lay down with her must also die by himself, and to the girl you must do nothing. The girl has no sin deserving of death, because just as when a man rises up against his fellow man and indeed murders him, even a soul, so it is with this case. For it was in the field that he found her. The girl who was engaged screamed, but there was no one to rescue her. So she's assumed, she's given the benefit of the doubt that she screamed, but no one could hear her because she was in the countryside. In case a man finds a girl, a virgin, who has not been engaged, and he actually seizes her and lies down with her, this is a girl who has not been engaged, and they have been found out, the man who lay down with her must also give the girl's father 50 silver shekels. 50 silver shekels, and she will become his wife due to the fact that he humiliated her. He will not be allowed to divorce her all his days. No man should take his father's wife, that he may not uncover the skirt of his father. So there are many separate instances. That's the end of Deuteronomy 22. There are many separate instances given there of different behaviors that are false or that are deserving of death. Look how high the standards were in the days of Moses. They wouldn't even tolerate things that today are easily tolerated, certainly not with a sentence of death or anything remotely close to that. In our days, it's just a huge difference. They had a much greater desire to preserve the purity of their associates, of their people, within the tribes of Israel in the days of Moses. We now have Revelation chapter 7. After this, John continues, I saw four angels standing upon the four corners of the earth, holding tight the four winds of the earth, that no wind might blow upon the earth, or upon the sea, or upon any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the sun rising, having a seal of the living God, and he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea, saying, do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until after we have sealed the slaves of our God in their foreheads. And I heard the number of those who were sealed, 140,000 sealed out of every tribe of the sons of Israel. These are the heavenly class. Out of the tribe of Judah, 12,000 sealed. Out of the tribe of Reuben, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Gad, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Asher, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Naphtali, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Manasseh, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Simeon, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Levi, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Issachar, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Zebulun, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Joseph, 12,000. Out of the tribe of Benjamin, 12,000 sealed. After these things I saw, and look, a great crowd which no man was able to number, out of all nations and tribes and peoples and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, dressed in white robes. And there were palm branches in their hands, and they keep on crying. They keep on crying with a loud voice, saying, salvation we owe to our God who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb. And all the angels who were standing around the throne and the elders and the four living creatures. No, and all the angels were standing around the throne and the elders and the four living creatures. And they fell upon their faces before the throne and worshipped God, saying, amen. The blessing and the glory and the wisdom and the thanksgiving and the honor and the power and the strength be to our God forever and ever. Amen. And in response, one of the elders said to me, these who are dressed in the white robes, who are they and where do they come from? So right away I said to him, my Lord, you are the one that knows. And he said to me, that is to John, these are the ones that come out of the great tribulation, and they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. That is why they are before the throne of God, and they are rendering him sacred service day and night in his temple. And the one seated on the throne will spread his tent over them. They will hunger no more, nor thirst any more. That's good to know. Neither will the sun beat down upon them, nor any scorching heat, because the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them, and will guide them to fountains of waters of life. And God will wipe out every tear from their eyes. That's the end of Revelation chapter 7, and that's the end of our Bible study for today, little ones. So we have about 10 minutes or so remaining, the most. I'm definitely not as sick as I was, which means I'm on the right track with the vitamin D toxicity being the cause of this current weakness that I had and still have to some degree. And so I need to abstain from both vitamin D and also from calcium until I recover. And I may be eating similar things to what I ate the last time I was recovering from what I thought was possibly vitamin D poisoning, but didn't know for sure because I was taking a lot of vitamin A at the time, and my symptoms seemed to fit the idea of a vitamin A toxicity, I thought, or even iodine poisoning. I couldn't determine then because I was taking much more A than I am now, and much more iodine than I am now. But this time, I know the symptoms match, and it must be, according to the symptoms, it must be diagnosed as vitamin D toxicity. But I was taking, I recalculated, realized my numbers were wrong. Instead of the limit of Zaratsky from the Mayo Clinic, which is about 60,000 units per day, I was taking closer to 600,000 this past, the few days that ended a couple of days ago. I was only taking that for a few days, but 600,000 units of vitamin D perhaps more, actually. Well, as much as a million is possible, but I wasn't. Well, I did write them down. Yeah, I did write them down. But I was taking 2 teaspoons of a liquid vitamin K2 that had vitamin D in it. And 2 teaspoons I was taking often, very often, because I thought it was helping me with certain issues. But the rule should always be when you take a supplement, you don't take it for one symptom. You always take it for whole body health. So if you're not getting your whole body health when you're taking it, you need to stop and reconsider. But I didn't know at the time that the vitamin D was much higher. Not the first time I've made that mistake with this particular liquid vitamin K2 either. So because of the it was MK4 vitamin K2, and it's so beneficial, and if you can take it without the vitamin D, it's very beneficial. But you need a little bit of vitamin D, but you can't get it solely from a source which has the vitamin D at a fairly high level already in it. You can't do it that way. So what I've started to do now is I'm still taking the K2 because that's not known to be toxic at all. I'm taking vitamin K2 without the D, but I can't take it in liquid form, so it's not as easy to take. But I've got other supplements that do have MK4 by itself, or in one case with alfalfa. And those are going to enable me to help get rid of the vitamin D, because K2 uses vitamin D. I need to take lots of this K2. But the other thing I'm doing is taking vitamin C, which is an excellent antidote to all toxins. So I don't doubt that that's going to help. And the third thing I'm doing is drinking a lot of water, if I can, which I can, of course, but that brings up a difficulty with the passage of water, because I have typically some significant difficulty with that because of scar tissue in the exit valve of my urinary system, which I explained at another time in a previous video. Now the time is 27, we've got 5 minutes and a half. There's a lot to talk about to do with supplements, and I'd like to talk about all of it. But I need to concentrate on my own monitoring of my supplement regime and not talk about it nearly as much as I actually monitor it. But I mean, this is a mistake that I think will be made by many others, and perhaps the company who makes the liquid supplement will consider making a form of it without the vitamin D in it for those who need or who desire to take a larger quantity of MK4 without the D, and just add the D separately as they need. I mean, 60,000 units is toxic, so if it's taken for several months, according to Zaratsky, in an article posted on the website of the Mayo Clinic. So that implies maybe less than 60 might be not toxic, but we are different, so it might depend on body weight and or body mass and other factors. So perhaps 10,000 units a day is not toxic for most of us. I believe that. I believe that's true, but some people do recommend, some doctors online are recommending 4,000 international units of vitamin D3 as a minimum, or as a recommended, I should say. But I think that you can go above that, but I'm just saying you need to be responsible for that decision. But when you get up around 60,000, Zaratsky says it's a problem. After several months. I only took it for a few days. I only started doing it for a few days. I gradually sort of forgot how much D was. How much D was in the supplement. I didn't calculate. But 500 units per drop of the vitamin D and 20 drops per milliliter. And I was taking 10 milliliters at a time, which is 200 drops, 20 times 10. 200 drops with 500 units each. And then when you multiply it, the first time I multiplied it, I got 10,000, but it's 200 times 500 is 10, which is 10, plus the four zeros from the 200 and the 500. So it's five zeros. It's a one with five zeros. That's 100,000 units. That's what I was taking every time I took it, and I took it many times per day. So I was getting close to 1,000,000 units of vitamin D per day. It shows you can survive that much vitamin D, perhaps. And I wouldn't be surprised if after I recover from the toxicity, that I have better health. That would not surprise me. That wouldn't, because that's what happened the last time I recovered from whatever toxicity I had, which I thought was vitamin A, possibly. We're up to the last couple of minutes. Okay, yeah. Well, today I made a few significant mistakes in my production of the video. But that song by Hall & Oates, let's talk about that for a moment. The syncopation, the incredible syncopation, the way they syncopated the vocals with the keyboard at the beginning of that song, and how it stayed that way, of course, throughout the song. But the way the vocal came in on the beat on which it came in wasn't that unusual. Wasn't that unusual? I think it was very extraordinary, and that's what makes a song for the singer very exciting, is when they can achieve some new realization of a new syncopation or a new rhythm and a new feel for a song that can make a song which otherwise would have very little interest for the singer into a song that's very exciting for the singer to sing. We have some passing motor vehicles here. So we're going to be 1 minute now before we will conclude. There's so many different ways to syncopate, which means locate the vocal in the beat structure of the song. You know, be on the beat, before the beat, after the beat, but on what beat? 1, 2, 3, 4. What beat if it's a 4-4 time or 2-4 time, on what beat or after or before what beat is the vocal starting and then continuing in that pattern is another part of that. But this is, it's just amazing. It's so such a blessing, and I'm so grateful to be privilege to give you these videos. And it's now time to conclude. It's August 31st, 2023, 1623 hours, Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green saying once again, I have deep feelings for everyone out there. I know most of us are being oppressed in some way or have some problems because of the misunderstanding among many of us, even our own misunderstanding that allows other people to mistreat or mistreat us or mistreat everyone because they're allowed to. We need to educate ourselves. So this is me saying, this is Crow, and this is Cassie on my behalf saying bye for now.